This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Climate change, nearby developments, native plants, and animals being driven out. These are just a few of the threats to America's national parks detailed in a recent report by the National Parks Conservation Association called the State of America's National Parks. The organization's Center for Park Research looked into 80 national parks to compile the data over a decade. David Nimkin is the Southwest Regional Director for the NPCA. He's based in Salt Lake City, and he joins me now in the studio to discuss the report and the state of national parks across the country and here in Utah. Well, David, it's great to have you on the show.
Great to be here, Jeff.
Listeners, you can join us on the air. What are your questions and concerns when it comes to national parks here and across the country? We're at 801-355-TALK. That is 801-355-8255. Well, Dave, first of all, the report details not only the threats to the natural resources in our national parks, but also the cultural resources as well. First, explain the difference between natural and cultural resources.
Well, the cultural resources are those places that really help to tell the story of America, both prehistoric and pre-Columbian. And we have, obviously, a great number of them in Utah. And actually, throughout the entire national park system of almost 400 parks, two-thirds of them are cultural parks. And that's not often recognized, but, you know, it's the Statue of Liberty and Civil War and Revolutionary War sites, as well as here, sites like Hovenweep and many of the paleontological resources around the country. Natural resource-based parks are those that are the large landscapes that that we are most familiar with in this state, that certainly represent even the identity of Utah with the Delicate Arch on our license plates.
And so this is a very extensive report, nearly 70 pages. Well, let's start going through it. What are the greatest threats to the, first of all, the natural resources of America's national parks?
Well, I think there are many. I might add that the study looked at about 80 national parks of the 394, about 20% sample over 10 years. Fairly extensive review, and this is a compilation of all of that work over the past 10 years. I think one of the most significant threats is adjacent development. Next to our national parks, that is causes fragmentation of wildlife. It has impact on air quality. It has the potential to contaminate the water quality and night skies. Those are things like oil and gas development. It's like real estate and housing development adjacent to parks. It's a full range of human activity that has those kinds of impacts.
Another threat is the disappearance of native species when it comes to plants and animals and the introduction of more, you know, non-native species. How does this process occur? Is this something that's been going on for decades and decades?
Long time, and it certainly is hastened by elements of climate change and other factors. But, you know, a classic example that we have here is tamarisk. That was introduced it's an exotic species. I think those of us that have spent time in the Colorado River and its stem and tributaries have seen it, and it chokes off wildlife, it chokes off native plants that have been there, and presents a real challenge to certainly natural functioning, drawing huge amounts of water from the scarce resource that we have. Another, just as an example, are quagga mussels that have invaded much of the Colorado Plateau waterways. I believe that it is not yet in Utah, or if it is, it's trying to be contained, but has real serious problems in crowding out natural species and also the recreational uses that we enjoy.
There's also the threat of decreased air quality, something we're certainly familiar with here in Utah. Is this primarily simply oil and gas drilling, or what other factors are there?
Well, all throughout the Southwest, we have challenges with that. They're a little bit different, perhaps, than in maybe some of the eastern areas. We're certainly familiar with that along the Wasatch Front and have been concerned about proliferation of coal-fired power plants. And that's one of the chief challenges that we face with our southwestern parks is the both potential for new coal-fired plants, but even more significantly, the re-permitting of existing power plants. And we have some huge ones, like the Navajo Generating Station right adjacent to Page, and the Four Corners and San Juan plants. Each of those are looking at and are being required to come up with what's called best available retrofit technology to deal with regional haze issues. And one of the stipulations in the Clean Air Act is that our national parks are held to a standard of having Class 1 view sheds and air quality. And it is incumbent upon those sources of pollution that they establish a standard that will keep the air clear, allow for high visibility. I mean, nothing could be more damning than to go out on the rim at Island in the Sky or the Grand Canyon and not be able to experience that. And people travel from all over the world for that one experience, and obviously generating billions to the regional economy.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with David Nimkin. He's the Southwest Regional Director for the National Parks Conservation Association, and we're talking about their new report called The State of America's National Parks. David, are most of these threats and the inability to curtail them for the moment largely simply a federal funding issue?
Well, it's certainly a part of it. The charge, when the national parks were created almost 100 years ago, the simple objective was protect these parks for future generations so that our children, our grandchildren can enjoy what we're enjoying now, and that it provide opportunities for visitor experiences that that are extraordinary. I think the parks do that. There are about 300 million people a year that visit our national parks around the United States. And the funding that supports both the protection of these places as well as the providing the infrastructure so that visitors can enjoy them, the rangers that we so associate with our national parks is profoundly shortened. And one of the calls to action in this report is that we really look for ways that we can fully fund by the centennial of the national parks in the year 2016 what is about approximately a $600 million operation shortfall. $600 million is a fraction of 1% of the federal budget, but it is something that all Americans and indeed people from all over the world seem to enjoy. And that translates into the kinds of things that we expect our National Park Service to do, to protect these places with additional research, with law enforcement, to protect us when we get lost or when we get injured in a national park. Those are the kinds of things that are woefully deficient currently.
Another call to action in the report is to monitor and respond to the impacts of climate change. Does the National Park Service right now currently have the mandate to be able to monitor climate change, or is that something that until now has only been left to private organizations?
Well, no. In fact, it is within the priorities of the National Park Service and the current director, John Jarvis, who had formerly been the regional director out in the Pacific region, has recognized impacts of climate change and has brought an interest in using the places that the national parks occupy, these large landscapes, as an area, one, to continue to do research that has been done over decades but has been limited in some part with funding, but really also look at techniques for adaptation. It's really how are we going to cope with the impacts of climate change? It's apparent in every park. What its impacts are and how we adapt to it is part of the grand experiment, I guess, that can be accomplished through the National Park Service.
Let's go back to the report's point about development near national parks. To me, this brings up the issue of wilderness protection. Now, there's obviously a big debate here in Utah about this. Under the current system, it's very difficult to designate new wilderness, and the Interior Department recently scrapped its plans to designate new wild lands in states like Utah, to the dismay of many conservationists. Do you think that this potentially poses a threat to the parks?
Well, I think it clearly does. Wilderness is obviously a very important part of our national park system. Not all of the parks are wilderness. Mm-hmm. For example, only recently was Zion National Park, the most visited national park in the state of Utah, mm-hmm. designated a wilderness in what has been a hallmark of wilderness activity is the Washington County Land Bill. One thing we know is that national parks really are at the core of large landscapes. They're not islands in and of themselves, and that they require a level of attention that we hope can be protected. One area of considerable focus for us is canyonlands. Mm-hmm. That area that is defined by the National Park Service does not conform to the natural erosional basin that is canyonlands. So looking below the rim, as I mentioned before, presents a problem because most of what you see below the rim is multiple-use land and proliferation of oil and gas development, potential tar sands development within that viewshed, and certainly off-road vehicle use that is rampant, really presents a challenge to protecting that area. So part of what we're advancing in Canyonlands is the greater Canyonlands ecosystem that really should have a form of protection mm-hmm. and not get caught up in the nomenclature, wilderness versus national conservation areas, park management. There just needs to be a level of protection to assure that we have in perpetuity the kind of sort of reckless wildland that we associate with canyonlands.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with David Nimkin, the Southwest Regional Director for the National Parks Conservation Association. He's based here in Salt Lake City. The new report is called The State of America's National Parks. David, do you think the problems in this report are largely the problems of elected officials, particularly in Congress, or is it also a problem within the executive branch and the Interior Department as well?
Oh, I think it's both. I mean, I think we operate in a political system where we clearly have to find, the art of the possible, as it says, and mm-hmm. as we recognize. Some of the work that we do is really reinforcing and building the political will to do what many think we should have. I think people tend in this state to take our national parks for granted, and I think there's a huge responsibility that we all have to protect these places, to advocate for them. And that falls on the shoulders of our congressional delegation and our state leaders, but certainly within the Department of Interior itself and the choices that they make. And I could detail for you a variety of choices before them that are obviously very important.
What are some of the most immediate ones?
Well, for example, the Department of Interior had been working and finally came out with a plan at the Grand Canyon. That they would restrict uranium mining from about 1 million acres surrounding the Grand Canyon. Study that was done indicated that the unique hydrology of that place would present some real serious issues for the 25 million downstream users of the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. And it was a great achievement. The Secretary of the Interior stood up for this great iconic landscape. And just today, we're dealing in Congress with an appropriations bill through the Interior Department where a rider introduced would strip that authority and strip the resources for that. There's a political battle. I think it hinges on the larger issues of our national fiscal challenges that we face. And clearly, there's no business taking that matter about protecting the Grand Canyon and protecting some of its adjacent use in that process.
David, there are some things in the report that show encouraging signs as well. It notes some encouraging data, some bright spots that give you hope that things will improve. What might be some of those?
Well, we certainly are looking at reintroduction of wildlife in certain places. Even small elements. We were involved in a project down at the Grand Canyon that after disturbances, whether they're natural like fire or human disturbances, mm-hmm. the proliferation of invasive plants changes habitat, changes the ability of the soils to absorb the water, and that is limited. And we worked actually with about 300 volunteers to cultivate native seeds, propagate them, and replant them in disturbance zones. Small kinds of things that make sense. In Arizona, proliferation of buffel grass, an exotic species, is actually contributing to the potential elimination of saguaro cactus at Saguaro National Park because of its present fire danger that might be created. Mm-hmm. And volunteer groups have been working to eliminate this buffel grass problems. The Park Service and federal land managers have recently introduced a beetle that is eating and killing the tamarisk in select parts of the Colorado River Basin. And so we're really pleased about that. We are seeing that there is hopeful signs that the management of the Colorado River that defines so many of the large parks and landscapes in the Southwest will take into account and will provide water rights for the parks that the river helped to define, and that can sustain the natural systems there.
And David, one of the recommendations in the report is to expand the national park system and add new parks. Do you think there's a fair argument to be made, though, that perhaps instead we should focus the limited financial resources we have on the parks that already exist and not expand it?
I think that's a good argument. We certainly take the position that there are losses that we experience. The whole theory, the whole notion behind our national parks is that we protect the rich textured biodiversity that we have in mm-hmm. our country, and that as we lose that opportunity, it won't come back to us. And secondly, there are national parks that continue to tell the story of the American experience. And I point to such things as the birthplace of Cesar Chavez in California, or the plan to sort of recognize the Manhattan Project and how important that's been, whether you like that or not, or even most certainly the shame associated with the internment of the Japanese in the Second World War. And to continue to protect those places, as our story evolves, we need to continue to protect those places so we learn, we don't forget, and it helps shape what our future will be.
And finally, David, just a minute or two left here. President Obama and Congress are talking about and may actually agree upon literally trillions of dollars being cut from the budget right now. What, you know, succinct argument would you make, you know, for America's national parks in a time when other priorities could be taking them over?
Well, it's always a challenge. We certainly make the case that the national parks themselves contribute to the lives of us in so many profound ways. As I mentioned, 300 million people visit our national parks every year. They're ways that many people experience natural systems and learn about our history. To fully fund the national parks in the next 5 years leading to our centennial is percentage points of 1% within that. And the parks have demonstrated at a minimum that for every dollar invested, they regenerate over $4 into local economies. Certainly in our part of the world, it's a great deal more. And the economic engines that are our national parks, certainly in Utah, certainly touted by our tourism officials, draw countless millions into this state. And to ignore the significance that they provide, we should be finding our elected leaders in Congress speaking to support funding for the national parks very, very significantly.
We have been speaking with David Nimkin. He is the Southwest Regional Director for the National Parks Conservation Association. Their new report, The State of America's National Parks, we'll have a link to it on our website at kcbw.org. David, appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We'll be right back.